We're doing Tanya 200, celebrating the 200th year since the first printing of the Tanya. We're up to chapter 15. And what we've learned up to this point is that a Beinoni, the person who is neither a saint nor a sinner, Beinoni meaning in between, is a person who never sins, never commits sin, not in thought, not in speech, and not in action. Yet he is not a saint, he's not a tzaddik, because inwardly, in his appetites, in his feelings, in his emotions, in his heart, he's not always holy. There are unholy desires, there are unholy feelings, which do not get expressed in the Beinoni, not in thought, not in speech, and not in action, because when it comes to behavior, the Beinoni is always correct. Always does the right thing. And that's because he is so committed to God and is so conscious of God's presence that even though he has an attraction, he feels the potential pleasure that sin might have, he will not and cannot actually do it. Doesn't want to do it, but he does sense the pleasure that's in the unholy. And that's why everyone can be a Beinoni, whereas not everyone can be a tzaddik. To be a tzaddik, you have to transform your heart. That's a very difficult thing. Most tzaddikim, by the way, are born tzaddikim. They are born that way. They're destined to be tzaddikim. And even if they have to work hard at transforming the pleasure of their natural soul into godliness, the work, the effort that they put into it is based on the kind of soul that they were given, which is destined to become a tzaddik. But if you don't have that kind of soul, no amount of work is going to transform a Beinoni into a tzaddik. What then is the role of a Beinoni? To have a duality of feeling, to be divided in internally, in emotions and in passions and desires, but to always conclude, to always act properly in spite of the natural soul's inclinations. In the tzaddik, we're told that there are two kinds. There's the perfect tzaddik, the imperfect tzaddik. In the sinner, we're told that there's the perfect sinner and the imperfect sinner. What about the Beinoni? What kinds of Beinoni are there? In the Beinoni, this is chapter 15, in the Beinoni there are two kinds. There is the one who serves, and there is the one who does not serve. The one who serves means the one who is engaged actively, presently, in the service of God. The one who does not serve means he's not actively engaged in the service of God. These are two kinds of Beinoni. The tzaddik is not called in the service of God. The tzaddik is called the servant of God. Eved Hashem. Moses is described as Eved Hashem, God's servant. But that's not present tense active. He is a servant. It's done. He has achieved, he has accomplished, he has earned that title. Just as we would say, he is a king, or he is a scholar. It doesn't mean he's trying to be, it means he already is. But when we say servant of God, we're talking about a tzaddik who has achieved, has completed the struggle, has resolved the struggle, his animal soul has become godly. When we say serving God, one who serves, we're talking present tense, that's a Beinoni. The Beinoni is engaged in a struggle. He is in the process of serving. He cannot be described as a servant because the struggle goes on. So it's not an achieved thing, it's a process. He is in the process and he is serving. But then there's the Beinoni who is called the one who does not serve. Not because he's a sinner, has given up, and not because he has prevailed and the job is done. He's not serving because, given his personality, he doesn't need a struggle. In other words, he has a natural soul that is not godly. But this natural soul happens to be passive. There are aggressive people, there are passive people. There's an aggressive animal soul, there's a passive animal soul. Now you can have a person who is not a tzaddik, has an animal soul with animal soul feelings, but those feelings are so feeble, they're so soft, that they never interfere enough with the Beinoni's devotion to being good, so that the Beinoni would need to struggle. It's not a struggle, it's a simple thing. The Beinoni decided to be good, and he's going to be good. And his animal soul, still an animal, doesn't offer much of a resistance or a struggle, not because it has become holier, but simply because it's passive. So you can have a person who spends his time studying Torah, not because he's working at serving God. He spends his time in study because he is by nature bookish. He's by nature a studier. He has no other interests. That's the nature even of his animal soul. So if he wasn't a Beinoni, if he wasn't a committed practicing Jew, he'd probably be studying other books. But he would be studying. So it was a very simple matter to say, well, I'm into learning anyway, let me read the right books. Let me read the holy books. It could be that the Beinoni, this Beinoni, doesn't have much of a struggle when it comes to sexual desires, because he's dispassionate by nature. He's not a very sexual being. And so this doesn't offer any resistance or any struggle. So he doesn't sin sexually, not because he's overcoming his appetites, but because his appetites are very easy to resist or ignore. So if he is by nature bookish, if he is by nature dispassionate, if he's by nature easily content, if he's passive in all of his desires, he can be doing all the right things, behaving like a Beinoni. All his thoughts are correct, all his speech is correct, all his actions are correct, but you can't describe him as one who is serving God, because he's not. He's coasting. And therefore, he doesn't deserve the title, because what motivates him to do the mitzvah is not coming from his effort. The fact that he's a Jew is not to his credit. He was born that way. The fact that he has a natural inborn commitment to being Jewish, well, every Jew has that. This is not of his doing. This is not of his creation. And so he doesn't get any credit for the Jewishness and for the devotion that that produces. And so he's called the one who does not serve. But he's a Beinoni in his behavior. The other kind of a Beinoni is the one who is actively involved in the struggle. He has an aggressive personality. He is a passionate person. He is not by nature a learner, and yet he does study diligently, and he does avoid distracting passions and so on. Now, if he works at this long enough, he will eventually arrive at a plateau where, having struggled with his sexual personality, he has finally mastered it. He now is comfortable with his pious lifestyle. He's now comfortable with his chaste lifestyle, and his sexual desires no longer offer a resistance or a struggle. Now he gets comfortable. He plateaus out. And here again, he becomes a Benoni who does not serve. He no longer needs to serve because being good has become second habit, second nature. And that's why the Gemara says that what is the difference between the one who serves and the one who does not serve? The one who doesn't serve repeats his lesson, reviews his lesson 100 times. The one who does serve repeats and reviews his lesson 101 times. What does this mean? Why does one more review qualify him as one who does serve, and the one who reviews only 100 times is categorized as the one who does not? In those days, when the oral law was still oral, it was not written down in the Talmud, every lesson was reviewed 100 times. That was the norm. That was the habit. Every student would review his lesson 100 times. And therefore, although it may have been difficult at first to review anything 100 times, eventually, if you were a student at the academy, you eventually got into the habit of reviewing a lesson 100 times. That became second nature. And so that was called not serving. The one who went beyond his habit, beyond his nature, from 100 times into 101 times, that extra time, that extra review, was more difficult for him than the first 100, because the first 100 was second nature. And when he pushed himself beyond his second nature into 101 times, that was with effort. That's called serving. So what we now have is a new definition, a new yardstick by which we measure virtue. Virtue is not measured by how many pages you've studied, or how much you know, or how many mitzvahs you have observed or performed. Now, we're judging a person by how much effort they had to invest in doing what they did. So it's now possible that the person who has studied less is more virtuous than the person who has studied more. Because for the person who studied less, the little bit of learning that he did demanded greater effort, greater service, greater sacrifice than the person who studied more. So now you can have a person who has accomplished a lot, but he is one who does not serve. He accomplished it all without effort, either because his personality permits it. He's got a dispassionate, phlegmatic personality. Nothing got in his way. He didn't have to work very hard at being a studious, diligent, obedient, devoted, and chaste individual. That all came easy because of his personality. So although he has accomplished far more than most people, but it's not all to his credit because it came easy without service. It's also possible that he once served, he once worked hard, he acquired some very good habits with a lot of effort, but once he acquired those good habits, once he had attained those good habits, they became second nature, and now he's coasting. He's plateaued out. So now everything he does comes easy. And unless he pushes himself to 101 times, he's not serving at all. He's passive in his relationship with God. And the person who is doing far less, but is still struggling to do it, is putting in the effort, is going out of his way, beyond his habit. That's the one who is serving God. There's another example in the Talmud for the one who serves versus the one who doesn't serve. The Talmud says that this wagon driver or camel driver would charge $1 or 1 zuz for a trip of 10 miles. But he would charge 2 zuz, double the price, if you wanted to go 11 miles. So 10 miles cost $1, 11 miles cost twice as much. And what is the justification? The justification is that the 10 miles is his regular route. That's the beaten path. And so he charges $1 for 10 miles of beaten path. But if you want him to go out of his route, if you want him to go out of his way, even 1 mile, that's much more difficult, and that deserves payment equal to the first 10 miles. So we find that a Beinoni will often have to struggle in a number of areas where even his good habits don't take him. So for example, if he's gotten into the habit of studying 6 hours a day, he's now comfortable with that. 6 hours a day is his habit. If he were going to study 8 hours, it would demand a great struggle on his part. He would have to put in fresh energy, new energy. He can't coast because his habit permits 6 hours, it doesn't permit 8 hours. The same would be true, for example, with charity. A person gets into the habit of giving 10% of his earnings. It wasn't easy at first. He was serving God when he did it for the first while, for the first couple of years. But after getting into that habit, after getting comfortable with the fact that 10% of his earnings just don't belong to him, they're gone, they're given away to charity, that becomes second nature, and it's no longer a struggle, it's no longer a service. He's not serving God, he's coasting. If he should decide to give 15%, this would demand a struggle. Here he would have to go back to serving God actively, presently. He can't coast because his habit, his second nature, permits for 10% of his earnings, but not for 15%. So breaking the habit, going beyond your nature, going beyond what is comfortable, this is the primary virtue, the primary consideration when we measure our service of God. The same would be true for concentration in prayer. A person can concentrate, can be honest in prayer up to a certain point because of second nature. He's gotten into the habit of being honest with God. And so when he stops to pray and he stands before God, he bears his soul honestly, but only up to a point. And up to that point has now become second nature. He can be honest about his faults. He can be honest about his mistakes. He can be honest about his transgressions. He can confess them. He can admit them. He doesn't hide them. He doesn't deny them. To that degree, he can be honest with God, and he can be sincere in his prayers. But it's possible that beyond that, he can't go. What would be beyond that? To be able to recognize and admit his imperfections in the good things that he does. When you do something bad, it's rather blatant and obvious. It's easier to admit a wrong action than to admit an ulterior motive in your good actions. So some people can admit to their mistakes, but they can't admit to their selfishness when they're being good. They can't see the flaws in their own goodness. That would take a new struggle. To be that honest with God, to have that kind of kavana, intention in their prayers, this would be a whole new frontier. Here they would have to have a new, fresh energy, a new struggle, a new effort in order to get past that resistance and in order to be able to be that honest with God in their prayers. So what we now have is this. Rather than struggling or hoping to become a saint, which is doomed to failure and disillusionment. We are told to strive to be a Beinoni. Don't try to despise evil. Try to serve God, which means do the right thing, think the right thing, and say the right thing, despite the fact that you're not single-minded or single-hearted in your commitment and devotion to what is holy and godly. There's a purpose, which the Rebbe will explain in further chapters. There's a reason that God created us non-saintly. There's a reason that saints are the minority, like the generals in an army. There are fewer generals than soldiers, in a good army anyway. There are fewer chiefs than Indians, because that's the way it's supposed to be. It's the soldier, it's the Beinoni, it's the non-saint who actually carries out the work, who gets the job done. And in order to do that, the Beinoni must be closer to the struggle than is the tzaddik. The soldier has to be in the thick of battle, the general does not. And so to do that, you have to give up something. You have to give up the fancy uniform, you have to give up the comfort of the tent, you've got to go out there to the front lines. And so the Beinoni is not suffering this internal conflict, in vain. By being in conflict, he has a greater influence, a greater impact on the unholiness in the world, because he makes contact with that unholiness through his natural soul. And so when he resists, when he subdues, when he saddles his natural soul and gets it to do a mitzvah, gets it to do what is right rather than what is wrong, he's having a greater, a more powerful impact on the nature of the world than the saint has. Because the saint is not as engaged with the world, does not touch the world, the nature of the world, as much as the Beinoni. And so we shouldn't strive to be tzaddikim, we shouldn't strive to be saints, we shouldn't strive to be untouched by nature. Instead, we should try to harness that nature in the service of God, which means you may not want to, but get it done. You may not desire the mitzvah, do it. You may not love godliness, but act it. Perform it. Observe it. So in behavior, in thought, speech, and deed, the Beinoni serves God perfectly. And in the fact that he is struggling to do it, he has an additional virtue. It's not a handicap, it's a greater accomplishment. And that's why in chapter 15, the Tanya says that even among the Beinonim, there is a preferred and a less preferred kind. The one who serves and the one who doesn't serve. Which brings us to the conclusion that not only should we strive to be a Beinoni rather than a tzaddik, but that even as a Beinoni, we should invite, we should welcome the service rather than the non-service. We should welcome the struggle rather than the resolution. So that if a Beinoni can be a Beinoni without trying very hard, because reviewing his lesson 100 times comes naturally, because sex is not a big problem for him, he's dispassionate, because wealth is not a distraction for him, because he's not acquisitive by nature, he should not be satisfied with that. He shouldn't feel like he's accomplished. On the contrary, he should go looking for a new challenge. He should try to break new ground and go where his personality does not permit easily. And the same is true for someone who has had a struggle, has tried, has harnessed an intense personality, a passionate personality, but now it has become second nature. So rather than stay on the plateau and feel like he's become something like a tzaddik, he should want, he should go out and seek ways of serving God actively, which would mean engaging in a struggle. So if he's comfortable going 10 miles, he should push himself to go the 11th mile. Which brings us to a very practical conclusion. As we try to grow spiritually, as we want to grow in our relationship with God, it is completely unnecessary to do dramatic things and to make dramatic changes. It's not how much you accomplish and in how short a time, it's how far out of your habit, it's how far off the beaten path of your nature you are willing to go. And one step beyond your habit is a great service. And when that becomes habit, you'll take another step, and that will be a great service. But to try to do dramatic things could be counterproductive. It could mean that we really lost sight of what's important, to serve God, to take a step closer to what He wants. When we try to do dramatic things, it might have some ulterior motive to it. We might be more interested in the dramatics than in the godliness of it. So when we stick to the godliness of it, serving God means taking yourself one step closer to Him by being one step beyond yourself. That's called the one who serves God. And in that virtue, even the Beinoni is divided, because the Beinoni who does not serve God is criticized, not applauded. And for him, a new challenge would be a whole new realm of godliness.